The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from wherever the fuck you found us, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. Well, there's one welcome mat. It's outside the studio where Cecil gets to record.
Oh, yeah. It's looking good, too, by the way. I just got to let you know. It's looking good. Looking, that studio is looking great.
The rest of us hunkering down in the isolation of our basements. But we are not alone. Not alone. Today, we are joined by none other than Seth Andrews. Seth, welcome to the show.
Loeb, I am with you always, even into the ends of the earth.
Seth, you got a new book coming out. Tell us all about it.
For it.
Plug away, my friend.
We want to jump right in. So go ahead.
I am trying to get the word out about this sucker. You know, for a couple of reasons. One of them is, and I'll be honest, hugely selfish. Like, nobody puts a book out and says, I hope it fails. Right. I want it to succeed. I want it to go out and make a ripple and to be part of the conversation. And that's really the second part is I feel like, especially now in this white hot political climate, in this weird, you know, big top circus that we found ourselves in, spiraling toward November 3rd. I want to talk about a culture that I came out of. The book is called Confessions of a Former Fox News Christian. And it's a reverse engineering of how I used to be that guy. You know, I was a total Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Fox and Friends guy. I was a Rush Limbaugh addict. I read Ann Coulter. I was this sort of, you know, God and guns. The founding fathers were all Jesus warriors, man. And this country belongs to me, and the seculars and the Democrats are coming for my freedoms and screw Jesus. Other nations. It's all about America. I mean, I was that guy.
How Texan were you? That is.
I'm close. I live in Oklahoma.
So Oklahoma, yeah.
We're Texas's hat.
Like Diet Texas right there. That's what that is.
And Texas is our ass. So it really kind of works out. It's a tandem relationship. So, you know, I wanted to go back and take a look at that. And to be a little more serious, to get into the nuts and bolts, where did Fox come from? These conservative power players obviously pushing right-wing, usually right-wing evangelical propaganda. How did this happen? What are the gears in the machine? We go back to the middle of the 20th century to sort of the formative years in the Roger Ailes Republican propaganda machine. We get into the ties between Fox News and today's Trump White House. We get into the culture itself.
Wait, there's a connection there?
A little bit of a connection if you look real hard. Also, like, you know, I wanted to get into things like the NRA. Where the hell did that come from? And how did they become a gun cult?
And where did they go today when they got dissolved? So anyway, but I want to ask though, how long ago for you was this?
Well, I was an atheist. I mean, I first said the word atheist in regard to myself in 2008. At that time, I was still a pretty solid conservative. like I emerged from my religious cocoon, but I had not yet looked at all of my value system and philosophies without my God glasses, right? Because once you get out, then you go back and you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, my view on abortion was filtered through religion. My view on the death penalty was kind of an eye for an eye thing. It was based in conservative Christianity. My views on this and that, and hell, even other nations around the world and the founding fathers and all that stuff, it was really rooted in Christianity. And that took another few years before I sort of sloughed off some of those. And it's funny because the people in my inner circle watching me are like, who are you? Like, you don't even recognize the guy today as opposed to the guy back in 2007.
Oh, I bet not. So, I mean, like, I bet you, like, you could tie your own shoes, you could button a shirt. I mean, the skills. I'm fucking around, obviously. I imagine some of those guys can tie a shoe. So, like, how big of an influence then was Fox News? Was Fox News, did Fox News, I've always been curious about this, did Fox News influence your thinking, or did it confirm existing thinking when you were in that world?
No, it's both. And I wrote about that in the book. It actually feeds on and feeds into the mindset all at the same time, right? It tells me all the time that I, as an American Christian, am under attack, right? The attack narrative is constant on Fox News. They're coming for your freedoms. They're coming for your God. They're coming for your guns. They're coming for America, you know.
They promise a lot of coming, but they never really get there. Yeah. You know,
I never get to climax.
It's a bit of a disappointment.
So I'm listening to that, and it validates the persecution narrative I already have. And then it also sort of feeds into me this message of fear, right? The amygdala fires up and I'm like, oh my God, they really are coming. And it's this feedback loop. I'm on this hamster wheel of panic all the time. So it was both. It was both a conduit and an amplifier for what I was already thinking.
So when you became a Democrat, or when you moved over to the left, did you have to give up all of your guns at that time? And like, how many guns did you lose in that process? I'm guessing.
Honestly, I still have a couple of firearms.
Too. That's why I'm asking.
I got a couple of firearms. And that's something that I try to talk about. I know nuance is dead on the internet, but you know, many people, when they hear about someone who owns a firearm in the United States, especially people in other countries, they just picture Seth's got a rusty red pickup truck with a Confederate flag flying and you know, a shotgun in the rack in the rear window, and, you know, is walking around in suspenders and no shirts and, you know, that kind of thing. But the truth is, there are millions upon millions of people who shoot for recreation. They even own a firearm, perhaps even for home protection. They're trained. They treat the weapon with the respect it deserves, with gun safes and proper training again and all those things. And they hate the NRA. Right. Those gun owners exist, okay? We're not all those people on the YouTube fail army videos, you know? We're not all those guys.
The guy who shot his own cap off his head while he's checking a squib round or whatever. Yeah, it's not that guy.
But my perception's really changed. It used to be like, well, if I was ever asked to surrender my firearms, I'm going to need my firearm because freedom. But I've come to the point now where I'm like, well, honestly, if the greater good demanded that we did like a national sort of roundup of firearms to make the world a safer place, if that was part of the national conversation and I had a social responsibility and a civic duty, I'd hand them in. I mean, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And that's the big difference than, you know, from the Seth 15 years ago, for sure.
So I used to be a Republican myself, too, years and years and years ago. I used to listen to, so I never watched Fox News, but I listened to Rush Limbaugh. I used to drive for a living, and I listened to Rush Limbaugh a lot. And I remember listening to Rush Limbaugh quite a bit when he was fighting against it was universal health care or something. It was Bill Clinton's plan back in the day when Bill Clinton had planned to create some sort of a big health care bill, and he was fighting against it. And I remember that it would arm me with all the arguments against, right? It would arm me with everything I needed for me to sort of march into battle in sort of an ideological war with someone, because it listed out all the things that I needed to know, and it removed from the conversation, removed from the idea, all the stuff that was a little problematic, a little tricky, the stuff that I might actually agree with, he never really mentioned, right? He only mentioned the stuff that would get me hot and moving. Do you find that sort of Fox's ideas too, that they give you what you need to sort of reinforce that idea over and over and over again, and give you sort of this ammo to walk into a conversation?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it fits in a box. I know with Rush Limbaugh, and I was a big listener as well, I know that I would, he would package it in a way that made it feel like a righteous crusade, right? And so when we opposed the healthcare bill during the Clinton administration, and Hillary was involved heavily in that, we opposed Hillary. You know, it became really about the enemy. Well, Hillary's behind it. Oh my God! You know, you don't. We also saw that any sort of nationalized anything was aligned with communism, which was aligned with the Soviet Union of the Cold War era. I mean, there's a whole culture of people that see that if you are working under any sort of a national or socialist model, you are emulating a worship of the state, which was part of a big panic throughout the 20th century. It's something that, you know, we used to call ourselves one nation under God, against the godless Soviet Union, against godless China, because they worship the state. And so there's this weird panic about anything that consolidates the nation as part of a social exercise where the government is involved. I understand being nervous about government waste and corruption. But, you know, if you want to see waste and corruption, you can look at the private sector as well. And by the way, look at all the other social shit that we do. I mean, you're driving on highways, your kids are in public schools, yeah. All these other things that people are like, well, that's different.
Yeah.
That's a different type
it's different
of social.
Exactly. I don't have, because I want that. That's the reason it's different is I want that. And that's what makes it.
You mentioned Hillary there, and I can't help but think that sort of thing spawned a whole new way to look at politics, which is very team-based and very anti-people rather than idealistic. You know, like thinking about the ideas that the group is espousing rather than I dislike this person. So it's really interesting. I think that Hillary was the first that I remember. I don't know that it's always been that way, but Hillary is the first that I remember.
Well, you know, Trump has been effective by embedding crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary. Yeah, yeah. I mean, every time he repeats it, fake news, sleepy Joe, I mean, he's got these little catchphrases. And the one thing he does effectively, especially to the MAGA base, is that kind of stuff just replicates in their brain. It just brands itself into their memory. And so now when they see Hillary, they see crooked Hillary. And that way I don't think he's a genius. I was going to say it's ingenious. That's not a word I would use with Donald Trump. But you know what I'm trying to say. I heard somebody say the other day that I'm aghast at a culture that will believe every rumor about Hillary and discard every fact about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
That's where we are. My own mother. All right. Now, she unfriended me on Facebook because I'm such a liberal heathen, and she just couldn't stand all the stuff I was posting. And I get that. I mean, it's totally fine. But my own mother says, I'm out. She unfriends her son.
That's so funny.
But my wife is still a friend of her. And she comes in and she goes, you should see the shit your mom just posted. I said, okay, fine. So she pulls it up, and it's this conspiracy theory that's running rampant among MAGA conservatives.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
That Fauci Bill Gates room together at Cornell.
Yeah,
you
seen it? I've seen it. And it's 100% false. Fauci and Bill Gates room together at Cornell. They never went to school together. Bill Gates, like, you know, there's like six different things that they assert, and not a single thing is true.
Like, Fauci would have had to have been 8 years old. I'm sorry.
Bill Gates would have had
to have been 8 years old if they roomed together at Cornell. Fauci never went to Cornell. They said that Fauci used to be the CEO of a pharmaceutical company. He never was. They had George Soros, who was working for the Nazi party behind this company that gassed the Jews during the Holocaust, which is now behind all the vaccine stuff. And I'm like, George Soros was a Hungarian Jew who escaped. I mean, it would have taken a 12-second Google search of the biographies of the major players to debunk this. But that's not what my mother's interested in, right? She's interested in, they're coming for us. They're coming for us. They're coming for us. It's all part of this apocalyptic Illuminati star chamber, one world government narrative, you know?
Yeah, so the best part about it is where they talk about Fauci in this, and I posted it. I'll post the link on this week's show notes, but the best part is when they talk about Fauci, they basically say that Fauci and this corporation, this Moderna, were linked. And the thing is that Fauci's been working in the same job since the 90s or something, or the 80s even.
Yeah,
and
he,
in 2010 or 14, this company was created. So he had no way that he could be positive. It's so funny. The Snopes of it is hilarious because it basically just says every single thing is false. Every single thing. And I saw it this week. And what's funny, Seth, is someone that I know who's a Trump supporter posted that this week.
Oh my God.
And it's because it's shared, but you're right. It confirms the worldview. It just 100% confirms what they're going to say and or think. And so they don't even bother to look it up because it makes them feel like they're validated. And the worst part about that whole thing, when you get to the end, there's no real conclusion. It's just sort of a bunch of conspiracy facts. And then it just there's nothing there. It just, I mean, I think it's trying to tell you not to get to take the vaccine eventually.
Draw your own conclusions.
But it's one of those, it's one of those connect the dots, sheeple. Yeah, and you're but I don't know where they go. I don't know what it makes when it's over.
It's the conspiracy theory of, I'm not saying, I'm just saying. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, most of those posts usually end up with the words "wake up."
Yeah,
Wake
it
up.
It does. I was reading it. It's like, are you awake now? Like, are you paying attention?
Well, you know, I write about in the book. There are, I mean, I'm not a brain scientist, but I'm leaning on brain scientists who actually have gone into sort of how conservatives think as opposed to non-conservatives. And there are trends. Now, obviously, there are going to be many exceptions to the trend or the rule. But brain studies have found that there is a greater fear response among people who vote conservative. They're more tribalistic. They're more xenophobic. They're more about routine. They do not like change. They are more averse to the other.
Makes sense.
They travel less. They experiment less. There are specific things about their brain, even the way the amygdala fires, the way the amygdala reacts to fear. Fear is a powerful emotion. There is some brain science revealing that among many hardcore conservatives, they are simply more afraid. I found that tremendously enlightening. And it explains a lot of how people operate because, you know, you got a network like Fox and you got people like Rush and Michael Savage and everybody tapping all the time on those fears. You know what? America is on the ropes, man. It's the end. If, you know, Christianity is going away, your freedom's going away, it's all going away. It's the end of the world. People then do what? They rally behind a savior figure. Yep. Hello?
Yeah.
Orange twat waffle. Yeah. Donald Trump. Right? He steps in and says what at the 2016 convention? He says, I alone can fix it, right? It's a godlike position, an authoritarian model that who then jumps behind? People who are religious conservatives who are trained to respond to authoritarian language. There's a whole lot of gears in that machine, but I did run across some interesting stuff for sure.
You know, it's interesting how much of the right-wing narrative is like, we're going to take away our freedoms, so we better install this authority to be in charge of us so that we can maintain our freedom. I want my freedom, damn it. Will you please be my king so I can have my freedom?
No. My favorite is this one. My favorite is, this is the greatest country on the face of the planet. Yeah. And I have to have an AR-15 in case I have to rise up against my government when it turns on me.
I'll be honest, after Portland, I'm starting to think maybe the AR-15, I might not want to give it up. You know what I mean? Whether it's stuffing people in cars. And, you know, it's weird because you're right. They have this idea that authoritarianism is bad for the most part until it's their guy. And then they're all on board, right?
Yeah.
They don't want it. You listen to them talk about Obama. Not a single one of them said he was chosen by God. But every single one of them says constantly that Trump is chosen by God.
I talked a little bit about the fact-free claims that we are the greatest country on the face of the earth. This is like, we're number one, right? We're always chest thumping.
Yeah.
And so I actually went through some of the major metrics. I'm like, so if you go up to someone and they, and I get it.
I have had this same argument.
Yeah. Like, I'm rooting for the United States. I want us to be a winner. I want us to be great and to achieve greatness. I'd love us to be number one in every metric. So I'm not against my own country, but I'm also like, just the act of saying we're the greatest does not make us the greatest. So by what metric do you say that? Is it cost of living? No. Median income? No. Average lifespan? No. Peacefulness or the amount of war in your culture? No.
Yeah.
You know, in every, almost every metric, we just fail. Education, we fail tremendously.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any difference because once you've made...
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe, we're amazingly awesome at failing.
We are number one in the world at national pride. That is what we are number one. We're
sense,
number
right?
one at saying we're number one.
I
found that extremely
interesting.
I want
to get a big waving finger that just says pride and pride. Just I'm proud of my pride. What I'm all about just being all about it. That's what I am.
You know, how does loving your own country, why do you have to cheat other nations? Like, why can't I laud and even love other places, other regions, nations, cultures? Why does it have to be an either or thing, which was common when I was a hardcore Republican? It was always like, you know what? It's my tribe inside these borders. Yeah. If it happens here, it matters. If it happens over there, what do I care? It's a tremendously insular, cocoonish way of looking at things.
Well, so you got out of it. A lot of people do, you know, people change. They change their minds. You know, we live in a culture right now that, I know sometimes I feel like we don't forgive people who change their minds enough. I think we should be more forgiving to people who see the facts, see something, and then make a decision on a better decision than the position they had before. How do we change minds? How do we, you know, your mind changed. How do we change people's minds to get them away from this sort of thing? Do you have any ideas on that?
It's interesting because I was asked this question the other day and you caught me at kind of a bad time because I'm not going to tell you that I've given up because I'm never going to give up. But after the long, unbelievable, jaw-dropping, language does not describe the comical awfulness of the Trump presidency. Like, yeah. I was naive at first. When he was first elected, I thought, well, yeah, all right. Well, after a couple of months of this, people are going to have had enough. And they're going to be like, oh, screw this. We totally made a mistake. And then after the next few months happened and, they'll come to their senses. Here we are after 20,000 documented lies or misstatements. After all, did you guys see the Axios interview?
Yes, absolutely.
With Jonathan Swan, who, by the way, deserves a stiff drink and a Pulitzer for the 30 minutes that he spent.
He's one of the few people to ask follow-up questions. I know, it's crazy. You know,
he didn't
insane.
Let him off the hook. I mean, he did let him gish gallop a little bit, but quite frankly, I still think the conversations need to happen. I still think people need to be challenged because, quite frankly, these, first of all, the MAGA Republicans that I am in contact with, and I live in Oklahoma, they're everywhere. Donald Trump, if he met them, would hold them in contempt. Like, he would hate their guts. He wouldn't give them the time of day and all that type of stuff. Also, one of the conversations I'm having is, okay, look, if your husband was a pathological liar and if he was a predator who's putting his hands on his own daughter's ass and if he bilked college students out of money and cheated a charity and faked his autobiography and did all these things, blah, 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 how would you feel about, would you stay with, no, I wouldn't stay with that person. What if your son was like that? Mm-hmm. Oh, I wouldn't want to train my child up to be that way. No, no, no. Well, how about your president? Well,
yeah.
The Lord sometimes uses flawed people to do his will.
I gotta say, so like, my true. Favorite thing, if there is a favorite thing, that's a pretty low favorite, but still, is the defense of Donald Trump as, because they never come out anymore, they're unable, even the most ardent supporters, for the most part, are unable to just say, that is a good man. Instead, they're just like, okay, all right, but sometimes what God will do is he'll send in like a piece of dog shit, and then you slip on that dog shit and you hit your head, and that's when you realize on your road to Damascus. So, you know, sometimes, like, they have to use the most like crazy roundabout, like, you know, God uses imperfect vessels of language. It's amazing.
ISIS attacks us, and they, while they're running at us, they slip on the dog shit. Then dog shit is a really beneficial thing.
Yeah. I'm pro dog shit. Yeah. Like, I would eat a dog shit sandwich now because, God made dog. It's, I mean, it's seriously the amount of fucking mental gymnastics and the fucking backflip bullshit that has to be done in order for them to be like, all right, you know, I recognize that he's. Because they all universally are at some point in their value system forced to be like, all right, now that one I didn't get. Like, that one I don't agree with. Like, I can forgive this.
If we're
going
to tie it to religion, right? Yeah. You got the Franklin Grahams, the Robert Jeffresses, you got Paula White, all the evangelicals who are just tap dancing over the state church line and romping through the White House on taxpayer money. And what was that line from Trump? Was it today where he said that Biden was going to hurt God? Yeah. I was like, holy shit. I didn't realize Biden had those types of powers. You know, that's news.
Well, he could drink a glass of water.
I'm thinking Biden might smell God's hair, but other than that, I don't know that he's going to hurt him. I want to ask you though, Seth, and this is, I think, you know, maybe I've never heard your origin story, but what shook you up? What got you to think differently? What changed your mind? And is that something we can use to maybe help us in this struggle?
Well, it's good that you brought me back full circle, because the truth is that there's a line out there, is a meme or something that says you can't reason someone out of something they weren't reasoned into to begin with. That's total horse shit, by the way. I hate that meme. I was reasoned out of my unreasonable faith, okay? Mm-hmm. People are reasoned out of religion or bad ideas all the time. So please, if you see that meme, counter it, dump it, delete it, don't spread it. It's just a bad idea. For me, it was a couple of big things. You know, back when I was in Christian radio, there was a Christian artist, Rich Mullins, who was killed in a car wreck, and I was supposed to go on the air on the radio that morning and talk about how, you know, God called him home. And this is all part of a great plan. And under the surface, I was thinking, what the hell? This makes no sense, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what God is trying to accomplish here. Right. It looks like we're just creating the happy ending we need to kind of deal with it. And you know, my best friend came out as gay in the mid-1990s. It traumatized me because I was very anti-gay, and I had to actually start to distance myself from those verses in the Bible, and 9/11 was big. And so I found myself slowly sort of stair-stepping away from fundamentalism. But when I was in my 30s, I think I finally just got tired of people telling me to fake it till you make it, right? I don't want to just believe, man. I want to know. And I stumbled upon this video by Christopher Hitchens. He was debating a rabbi in New York.
I know this one.
I don't know anything about Hitchens, right? But I figure, well, if anyone can pitch God and win the argument, going to be the good rabbi. I'm not Jewish, but I think the rabbi's probably got this one. And at the end of 90 minutes, Christopher Hitchens had whitewashed this man to biblical proportions. Yeah. And I thought, holy shit, what happens when the guy I'm supposed to oppose is the one who makes the most sense? And that started me down the rabbit hole, man. And at the end of the year, I realized that there was nothing there. I reread the Bible, realized there was nothing there, looked at the other religions, realized there was nothing there. And, you know, it was a long, arduous journey. And a lot of it's, you know, the consequences, right? Because once you walk away, what else is going to fall? Who are you going to lose? What are your parents going to say? Will you lose your job if your boss is a believer? All those types of things were going on. So I wrote about it in my autobiography, Deconverted, if anybody's interested. But I guess the short answer is that I just got fed up with being told I'm supposed to take somebody else's word for it, you know?
So I have a question about your new book too. So that, and that ties in perfectly with the story. So when you watch, have you gone to church since you've been deconverted?
I've only been in a church for weddings and funerals. That's
Have you watched Fox since you've been deconverted? Since you've like come out of this mindset?
I did before. I mean, I ditched cable. Now I'm one of those cats that I just made up for my huge cable bill by paying a shit ton of money for 15 different streaming services.
Right, that's the same thing. Yeah, that's all of us.
I cut the cord. Now I have 12 different cords.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm not paying $120 a month for TV, and then I've got seven or eight different.
Yeah, yeah, you are.
But I do watch. I watch the segments that are posted And I try to watch them in their entirety so that I'm not just cherry picking, but it's hard, man. It's, you know, it's hard to watch Tucker Carlson. I mean, there was a segment, and I write about this in the book from a few years ago, where he was railing on his show about the evils of the metric system.
Wait, what?
He called it the tyranny of the metric system. And I'm like, how desperate are you for a villain?
First came the centimeters and they said nothing.
First they came for your yardstick, yeah. Right? It was unbelievable. You know, Ainsley Earhart, who's part of the Fox and Friends morning show, she's written, she hosts a Bible study on Fox Nation. You've got Sean Hannity. He's co-sponsoring some of those Kevin Sorbo religious films that are out there. They're really bad, pure
films. They are Herculean
films
in how bad they are.
Yeah. I think he even guest starred in one of those movies. And you know, and there are tons of ties to the evangelical right in this sort of Christian nation narrative, which does what? Essentially, it renders everybody who's not a Christian a second-class citizen. If you're not a Christian, you can't be a good person. You certainly can't be a good American. And, you know, I watch it as much as I can stomach to be aware of what they're doing. But honestly, I mean, it doesn't take long before you realize that they're doing what they've been doing since 1996. So
Seth, I know people send you messages. I know we get messages from people that did sort of walk away from religion. I mean, I'm sure you receive way more than we do, since you're probably a lot more of a transitional show for people who are just sort of starting to pick up atheism. We're more, you know, if you want to make fun of stuff, come find us. But you're certainly more approachable when someone is still a quasi-believer. So I'm sure you've received a lot of different messages from people. So I think that it's evident that reason does work. I mean, I think it's evident, as even in just the few messages that we get, reason does work. And so I hope that people read your book and they don't give up on this sort of, give up on, you know, those people aren't reachable. You know, that's what I hope.
Well, I do know this, the shouting is getting us nowhere, right? All the screaming at each other has not produced fruit. If I can be biblical for just a second, it just causes people to double down. You know, they get in a defensive posture. And I really think conversations, we're going to win this battle in the arena of ideas. And there are so many examples of people who hold extreme views, who were talked out of those extreme views. I was speaking the other day about Dia Khan. She's a documentary filmmaker, a Muslim woman. And she decides to kind of try to find out what's going on in the white supremacy movement. So she contacts these skinhead KKK guys and say, look, hey, would you talk to me on camera? And manages to get in their living room, sitting 4 feet across from them. And instead of them being like at some protest where everybody's throwing bottles and doubling down and nothing ever gets solved and it usually gets violent and crazy, she created an incredibly human moment where she was having a conversation. Do you think I'm less than a human being? Do you think I should be evicted from my home? Would you personally kick me out of this country? Why would you do that? And it's amazing, because some of these guys who were so used to, I mean, they're ready for the protest on the street. They're not ready for the human moment. Like, one guy had to stop the interview. He just tilted right there. And by the time it's called White Right. It's on Netflix. The documentary is also on YouTube. By the time the thing officially released, a couple of the guys, these hardcore hate group white supremacist guys, actually left the group. And I believe at least one of them started a recovery group to help get other people.
Wow.
And that started not with milkshaking people and throwing rocks and F-bombs and everything. It began by humanizing these issues and having a conversation. I know it's not popular among some people, but I just think we're going to have to defeat bad ideas with better ideas. So I mean, there's a time for a hard stand. I mean, I'm not saying that we should all sit around and try to be kumbaya with the most toxic people in the world. But, you know, it was Ryan Cragen at the University of Tampa. He's a sociologist, and he was talking about what's the, one of the major contributing factors for people to actually change their mind. And the number one in his research was changing their social circle, right? If everybody around me is a Fox News Christian, that's my normal, right. That's my world, then I'm never introduced to another idea. And it's only when I meet somebody who's different than me, who thinks differently, who votes differently, who acts and talks and worships and whatever differently than me, it humanizes them. That's when conversations begin. And so I really do think, you know, we need to be interacting with those we disagree with. And we also need to be showing them a loud, proud example of what the opposition looks like that is not the caricature that they've been taught to fear.
You know, I never believed that up until very recently. I never believed that at all until very recently. I used to say all the time, like, no quarter for bigots. Like, and my idea was that, you know, if bigots had no place socially and otherwise to go to feel welcome, that they would be forced then into reexamining those ideas, right? If their friends and their family and their coworkers, if they just kept getting excluded from those spaces, that they would then find themselves in the uncomfortable position of being forced to reexamine those ideas. And otherwise they would be marginalized. And so they would lose power. They would lose power in society. And I don't believe that anymore because the internet has changed that, right? Now, people with marginal ideas can just find other people in new spaces to reinforce and echo chamber those ideas. So if I have a terrible set of ideas, I don't have to bring it into the real world. I can live in an entirely insular online space that simply reinforces those ideas. So you cannot create a no quarter for bigots plan. It's not effective. And I think that I've come around to what you were just talking about. Like you have to sort of fight fire with not more fire. You know, it's not effective. It doesn't accomplish very much.
Well, I don't have a magic bullet. I mean, honestly, in some ways, like for November, I'm really not spending my time trying to convince Republicans.
Sure.
I want to push through them, right? I want goodness and humanism and the Constitution and the rule of law and all those. I just figure I want us to just push through them and overwhelm them in terms of numbers and influence to effect positive change in November. My focus really isn't on them because I'll admit to being discouraged.
Yeah.
It's really a cult. You know, Stephen Hassan has a book called The Cult of Trump, and it's very cult-like, allegiance
for sure.
to the man.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. So Seth, tell people where they can find the book. And you said it's coming out on audiobooks soon.
Yeah. The audiobook will be out any moment. I thought it'd be out a couple of days ago, but it should be out here by mid-August easily at audible.com. But you can find everything, all the links, including the audiobook when it comes out. Just go to my personal website. It's all there on the homepage, sethandrews.com. And, you know, I hope you like it. And, you know, buy a copy for the Fox News lover in your life.
Thanks for coming on, Seth.
You bet.
Wait a minute. You have to go by where... Look, here is the United States.
You have to go by the cases. What's called science. We have more cases. Don't we get credit for that? Well, we show more cases. They are dying. That's true. And it is what it is. Now it's going down again. And, you know, there are those that say the world is so very...
So Tom, I wanted to talk again about the Lincoln Project. They came out with another ad that I want to play. It's about Jared Kushner. And I'm glad, here's the thing. I'm just glad somebody is talking about Jared Kushner. Because like when he does things in the government, I always think, who hired this guy? Where did he get, how did he even get his job? I don't even get it. So I want to play this clip. This is from the Lincoln Project. This is their newest ad on Jared Kushner.
President Trump gives lots of jobs to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Insiders whisper he may be even more powerful than Trump. But like his father-in-law, Jared's not up to the task. This pampered princeling has never met a problem he couldn't f*** up. Take the COVID response Trump assigned Jared to handle. 150,000 people dead and an economy in ruins.
That by July, the country's really rocking again.
His task force put Trump cronies first. And of course, Jared's family cashed in on bailout money. No surprise from the son of a convicted felon and slumlord who served time in prison. Jared's a perfect fit for this White House. But if you've ever wondered whether this president took COVID-19 seriously, look no further than who he put in charge of protecting America's health. Jared Kushner, Trump's Secretary of Failure.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
My favorite.
So how do they really feel?
Oh gosh, Tom, it's so good. But one of my favorite parts about it is when it starts out at the very beginning and it's clearly trying to piss Trump off by saying that maybe he's even more powerful.
I love it so much.
Oh, it's so bitchy. It's so bitchy. I love it. I can't. I watched it earlier and it's on the heels of an article that came out this week that Jared Kushner, some advisors, high-level advisors in Jared Kushner had agreed to sort of not go into trying to fix any coronavirus problems because they figured it was just going to be a blue state problem and they were going to blame those governors and blame those blue states.
Yeah, they were going to use the deaths of American citizens in a horrifying pandemic as a political ploy to maintain political power. Like that's, that is... God, you know, if you ever was thinking, man, maybe I'm too cynical these days.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I don't think you are. Yeah. I don't think it's possible anymore to be too cynical.
Now, when it came out earlier, I couldn't believe that they had said it out loud. The thing that's crazy about it is you just got to say out loud, it's a virus. We have no, there. It's not like when I leave Illinois, I have to go through a checkpoint to get to Gary, Indiana. I just drive over an interstate. I either pay for the Skyway or I take I-80 and there's nothing to stop me from entering another state. The states have free reign to go literally in any of the states in our nation. And so the idea that somehow the Rona is just going to stop like a fucking mime at the wall, holding its palms, pressing forward, moving its head back and forth, trying to get through the invisible barrier that is the border of Indiana, Illinois, is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
And like, what happens to the virus when it gets to a purple state? Is it allowed in, but like, just not all of its friends?
Yeah. It only goes to the large metro areas. All the rural areas
there
are spared. Yeah, that's how it works.
It goes to anywhere that there's a college and a library.
Yeah.
That's...
Oh, God.
Like, you could ask yourself like, hey, is there a college you want to attend and a museum? Because if there is, it's probably blue. Like, if there's like a museum...
If there's going to be a lecture somewhere.
Does somebody have a PhD and is there a painting on the wall that didn't come from Thomas Kincaid? If that's the answer.
You know, when I see these ads, though, and we talked about the Lincoln Project a couple weeks ago, and some people gave us some guff and said, you know, the Lincoln Project isn't your friend. And I don't think they're our friend. And I don't misunderstand. I treat the Lincoln Project like I treat Riddick and Pitch Black. It's a necessary evil, right? Yeah. Riddick and Pitch Black, he's gonna do all the things I need him to do. He's gonna do all the dirty work I need him to do. But I'll tell you this. I need him to fight Tombs, to kill Tombs on the side. I need him to pull his fucking his goggles back and show me the way back to the ship. But as soon as I get the opportunity, just like with the Lincoln Project, I'm going to put him in the fucking airlock and I'm going to shoot him off into space. Don't get me wrong. These aren't my allies. These aren't people I want at the table, but they will go low enough in really big ways. They go really low against Trump. They go, and that's the thing is you can pull yourself away from it as in politics and say, wow, that Lincoln Project, they're really giving it to Trump, but they're not part of your party. It's kind of a huge gift.
Yeah. It's an enemy of my enemy moment.
Exactly.
That's all it is. You look at him, you're like, it's like you're fighting alongside and you look over, you're like, all right, Russia.
Yeah.
You can help us beat Germany. But when this is over, we are not like, we have some things to talk about when this is all over, but let's kick Germany's ass first. Like, it really is. Exactly. It's an enemy of my enemy moment. Like, yeah, I don't support a lot of the Lincoln Project's ideals, but like their big ideal right now, which is getting rid of Trump, I couldn't support anything more than that right now. I have never cared about an election more and cared less about the person I want to win.
Yeah.
I don't care at all about Biden at all. I don't care about him. I don't like, I spend none of my efforts thinking about like, gee, what's he up to these days? Let's really talk about Biden's platform. I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to say, I don't give a fuck. Like, is he not Trump? Yeah, all right, good enough for me. I would vote for a toothbrush that needed to be replaced, Cecil. Yeah. I would vote.
I'd vote for a dead lithium ion battery, one that won't even take a charge anymore. It's just, at this point though, I definitely feel like, you know, attack ads work. Attack ads definitely work. And I think the more that they make him, and they definitely make him angry, right? They make
he's
Trump
the thinnest
angry.
Thin skin motherfucker on the planet.
He has super thin skin. And so I feel, and this week was the first attack ad I saw about Trump, and it's in reference to, this is from the Biden camp, and it was in reference, and I'm sure there's been others, but I haven't seen them yet, right? So this is the first one I saw. So I'm qualifying with, it passed over my eyes. I'm not saying they don't exist, but I am saying this first one I saw.
First one you saw.
And it was about the interview this week with Axios, which we will be talking about on the live stream later on tonight. And if you missed the live stream, you could go check it out. We're doing a review of the Axios interview that aired on HBO with Trump. And it's Tom and I watched the full 45 minutes. We're going to watch selected clips of it tonight. But really, the ad is based around one sentence that he says, which you knew was a huge gaffe when he said it in the interview, which is he's talking about 150 deaths and Trump says it is what it is. And it's based around Trump trying to get out of the blame for it. But he says it is what it is. And they take that and they run with it. And it's perfect in that sense because, you know, you couldn't imagine another leader saying that out loud. And so I think that it's these attack ads that are coming out now, it's, you know, maybe I might not have been so great about them 10 or 15 years ago, but at this point, I'm just thinking anything that will change anyone's mind to not vote for this guy or even just stay home if you were going to vote for him is
I'm
better
all right
for
with
me.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, if you're leaning right, I don't need you to lean left. I just need you to lean home.
Yeah.
Like that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Like just
stay home.
Don't come out and play.
Yeah. Vote for Jill Stein. You know, whatever. I don't give a shit.
All right. The reason why the coronavirus started, because of pussy ass Batman.
Why?
Because he's a bitch.
They fought one-on-one.
Joker beat up a Batman impersonator.
Yeah. You don't know that?
No.
Would you fight any Batman impersonators?
Yeah. Or any Robin impersonator.
You don't like Robin?
Nah. I'll kill him.
So holy shit, Cecil. Like, I know, like, there's a lot of podcasts in the world that have like a Florida man segment. And I actually try to avoid that shit because like it's a little repetitive. But every once in a while, you watch a video and you think, holy fuck, now we've got zombies.
Yeah.
Now we have zombies attacking us. 2020 has come around. All right. Here it is. I'm sure a lot of people have seen this video. It's from Click Orlando, but you can find it fucking anywhere. Man beats on windshield of moving semi on Florida's turnpike for miles. So this dude jumped over like one of the like retaining wall things and like ran out toward traffic. And this trucker slows down because this guy's like fucking half naked. And he's like, hey, what's going on? And the dude like jumps onto the man's truck and has some kind of an implement and is bashing at the man's windshield.
Smashes his window. Yeah.
So the trucker's like, what the fuck? I was trying to help. And so he hits the gas. And then this guy is clinging to the front of the truck for 9 miles. 9 miles. And the trucker is shaking and like wiggling and like trying to throw this dude off.
Yeah. The trucker is not doing this passively, right? He's not just driving down the road and once in a while, like lifting his cup of coffee and tipping it at the guy in front of his window. He's actively trying to shake this guy off his car like an action movie.
Yeah. It's like, seriously, it's like from Matrix 2. You know, yeah. like if he had jumped onto the truck and the truck had crumpled somehow beneath his weight. How
amazing.
It is the craziest shit. It seriously looks like fast zombies attacking a truck.
There's so many things that happen day to day. This last week, I'm sure everyone in the world saw this explosion in Beirut.
Holy
right?
shit. That was an insane explosion
and the amount of people who died. And it was just an absolute tragedy. It was funny because when I first saw the news reports of it, they were flowing through my feed, whatever feed I was looking at. And I just saw this little tiny bit of smoke coming up because it was the beginning of the video and I didn't realize it, right?
Right.
So they keep showing the beginning of the video and it's just a little bit of smoke. And I think, well, it doesn't look that big. And so I scroll past it. I didn't pay a lot of attention. But it seriously is like the explosion in Akira. It's like a fucking nuclear weapon almost. It looks like it, you know, because it was 3,000 tons or something of
ammonium nitrate.
And so it's just a fertilizer. It's what they blew the federal building in Oklahoma up with. And so, you know, it's that kind of stuff and it just explodes and just detonated the whole area. But, you know, little stuff like this happens during the week. And I just keep wondering, is it always this crazy or is it just this year? And I feel like what happened is we're in a sim and someone just last year decided, you know what I want to do? I want to play on hard mode. So yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to restart it and I'm going to put everything on hard mode. We're going to get a virus in here. We're going to have random explosions. We're going to have dudes who jump on top of trucks and beat them up. We're going to just have it all. Is there anything we can just do it all? I moved all the sliders up one too
just
many. That's my, that, yeah, just a little up. Too much. Just a little too much. Yeah.
That explosion was insane, man. Bigger than any conventional non-nuclear weapon that I was reading. It's larger than the MOAB, you know, it's significantly, like it's like massively larger. They said it was the largest non-nuclear explosion in recent history.
Yeah.
All you have to do
is watch the video and it's so intense.
It's
so intense. People are miles away getting knocked down.
That's nuts.
I mean, it's insane. The damage and stuff that they do. And then to see the videos that are coming out afterwards, because so many different people were filming from so many different angles. And then also people were doing other things. There's a really interesting video of high quality of this woman who's getting her wedding pictures taken.
Getting
her wedding pictures taken on a gimbal. The person clearly has like a gimbal that they're doing this really pretty video. Beautiful woman in this gorgeous dress. And then you see everything shake. And this gimbal runs away to sort of see what's going on and comes back. And the bride and the groom are just running away. Just exploded all the windows nearby. The pressure wave just exploded everything. It's just it was such an intense explosion. And from what I was reading, that country was already reeling because of coronavirus in a huge way. And so they're in a big, big, big bunch of problems now, especially with this destruction, because it blew up one of their only ports, if not their only port. So it's just it's a mess.
Well, did you hear like Trump almost immediately was like talking about it as an attack? There's no evidence at all that this is an attack of any kind. From everything I've read, it sounds like a Russian ship was confiscated.
Yeah.
Like 10 plus years ago and has sat in a port and the Lebanese officials were like, oh, it's super dangerous to have 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate sitting on a shitty boat.
They sent letters multiple times to try to get it out of there. And it was in a warehouse and they could never move it. And it just,
like Trump, of course, immediately is just inventing facts.
Yeah.
That's the president we have. Like he's a guy who just jumps to a fucking conclusion and begins inventing facts. And immediately, that's important because, like, what does that tell you about his mindset? An explosion in the Middle East? That's an attack.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. It's never an accident. It's always an attack. That's a guy who does not think first and verify first before acting on his impulses.
Christopher Reeve, who was once paralyzed, claims that he can now stand.
Thank you, everyone. To most people, this is just an ordinary fetus. But to people like me, it's hope.
What an inspiration. Tom, many celebrities have spoken out in protest of stem cell research, but after seeing this, how can they protest now?
So this story is not something I thought I would read in my life. This is something from HuffPost. Roasted fetuses in luggage. You heard that right. Chow Hak Ken intended gold leaf corpses for ritual, says cops.
Gold leafed?
Yeah, this is gold bronzing of roasted fetuses.
Well, I didn't realize that. I thought you must really have to be a high level donor to Planned Parenthood to get those. Like, I feel like the ones they send me are not gold leafed, you know, and that's upsetting to me. And
this is actually like the Planned Parenthood lucky rabbit's foot.
Yeah,
it's on your keychain.
You just walk around with it, rub it once in a while to not get pregnant,
today, right? Oh man, it's like you and your significant other look over and like look at the fucking. She's got him as earrings, you know. Hey.
She's got him as earrings. Every once in a while when she gets pregnant, you just pray to it so it aborts the fetus without having to go in.
Oh, man. You're going to have to get pregnant and abort that thing so we can like get a matching set. You know, you want the earrings, necklace. Like it just...
You want to get the whole thing.
Hang on.
It's all shebang.
So this is fucking weird, man. So this is very much what it sounds
is.
Like.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's admittedly,
roasted
yeah.
fetal... corpses, six of them, as a matter of fact, found in some guy's luggage. The bodies belong to fetuses between 2 and 7 months old. 7 months?
Wow.
That's a lot of gold. At the cost of gold these days? And then they roast them. Because you want a nice, you got to get a nutty flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't need to braise them.
They're kind of a bitch to clean, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like,
not a lot of meat on the bones yet. It's hardly even worth the effort, but crispy.
What is happening, Tom?
Yeah, this is part of a black magic ritual called cumin thong. And I thought, like, that's the least sexy thong ever. Like
it
a
really
roasted
is.
Fetus thong.
It really is. Well, a cumin one, too. Roasted cumin. Sorry.
So it means golden child in Thai. The preserved bodies are thought to bring good golden fortune child. To the owner.
Golden child. That's an
Eddie Murphy movie. Yeah.
I want the knife. Yeah, I remember that movie. That was a great movie. Yeah.
I love it because it is very much like Lucky Rabbit's foot. It's supposed to bring good luck. Hmm. Like
not to him, though. I mean, he had a bunch and he got arrested. What the fuck? That's a terrible lucky charm.
It is very much like a lucky rabbit's foot. I remember, like, do you remember when they sold lucky rabbit's feet in, like, the quarter machines when we were kids?
I do.
And I don't think they were real rabbit's feet. But, like, I remember I wanted one because I told my dad they were good luck. I was little and stupid. And my dad's like, well, I wasn't that lucky for the rabbit. You know, that was his joke. But it's like,
it's true. The rabbit's looking at you like, you cut it off. All my luck is leaking out now.
Great. I'm a three-legged rabbit. Now I look like a dick. Now I just look like a dick.
And it's so fast. It just goes in circles. Just keeps on running in circles after that.
How's he going to bend Fudd's gun up without the other foot?
Exactly. Like,
yeah. That's just so fucking bizarre. They sell for $200,000 in Thai money. Or $6,376 in regular.
I was going to say, God.
So I guess you can get a roasted golden fetus for about half of a used Honda Civic, it turns out.
What a weird story, man. God.
It's so bizarre.
How weird is that?
There's got to be a moment in your life, Cecil, where you're the guy roasting fetuses. And you're like, man, I gotta get a new job.
Yeah. You're like, the line cook at Planned Parenthood and you're just shaking your head. I don't want to do this anymore. Why am I doing this?
They always want these things well done. Fucking Neanderthals out there.
Medium rare fetus is where it's at. It's tender.
You're letting all the juices, all the juices.
Don't squish it. Come on.
Stay the fuck at home. Stay the fuck at home. Don't you be a fucking dick. Please stay the fuck at home. Stay the fuck at home.
So this story comes from Reuters. Cuban dons full body cardboard shield against coronavirus.
That's amazing, dude. That's amazing.
The video is the best thing ever. This guy is wearing just boxes. He's got like a box fort from when you were a kid. Like, remember, like, when you were a kid, you get, like, a bunch of boxes. Like, somebody would, like, throw out, like, a big appliance box. And you're like, oh, yeah. And this dude is just walking around in a giant car. This is a woman, actually, walking around in a giant cardboard box to protect herself from the virus.
So the box, I got to describe it. So the box has... It's a box that's just a normal regular box, but with a big slit in the front and then armholes in the side. Yeah. So it looks like an old timey 1950s robot.
Yeah.
But then my favorite part of the article is at the end. It says on top, she glued cake boxes to make it look more like a house with a roof than a flat top apartment building.
Well, it goes with their slogan on the box because Cuba's coronavirus slogan is stay at home. And so her slogan on the box is, I am at home. What about you?
What about you?
It's a mobile home.
It's so funny looking. It is. What I love too is the creativeness. Sometimes there are some really funny stories out there about the creativeness that people are doing. I saw a video this week that just made me die laughing. And it was a guy, he's an online professor or something. And I'm not sure exactly who he is, but someone had one of his students, I guess, or something had made a mask of his face, the lower part of his face. And so he bought one on Etsy or whatever.
Oh, that's amazing.
And he put it on his face and the whole time he's crying, laughing, looking at himself because it's like 20% bigger than the rest of his face. And so he looks all out of proportion and weird and hilarious. And so he can't even form a sentence with this mask on because he keeps seeing himself in the recording and he's dying laughing. And I think there's some really funny moments that are coming out of this. And this is one of those moments, one of those hilarious moments where someone's creative and funny about it.
And like, I mean, it does look like this person is taking like real precautions. Like it's not like total bullshit. Like, and they're saying like, it's also a nod to the lack of PPE, you know? So like when people don't have access to like actual personal protection equipment, like they have to improvise. And like, if you got to improvise, people got to shop. Like they got to get food. Yeah. They got to go out.
Yeah.
Fuck me in the ass because I love Jesus. The good Lord would want it that way. Give me that sweet sensation of a throbbing rationalization. It's just between you and me. Because everyone knows it's the sex that God can't see.
This feels like one you just got to read, Tom.
I think so. Brazilian mayor suggests COVID-19 treatment using rectal ozone application.
Okay. And if you like rectal ozone, you can go to adamandeve.com, type in Gloria at checkout. You'll get 50% off almost any item and free shipping. Gloria at checkout.
So the mayor of the Brazilian city of, nope, not going to pronounce it.
Yeah, don't try that.
Some guy said Monday the city would offer rectal ozone therapy for patients with COVID-19.
Caliente.
How long has this guy been waiting to be like, finally... He's been wanting to do this for so long.
He's standing outside of his rectal ozone therapy place with giant scissors and a ribbon. He's just ready to cut. He's like, here we go.
Fine. My wife's not into this, but I can find somebody who's going to be a taker. The city already provides ivermectin and camphor as preventative options. I'm sure I mispronounced it. I'm sorry. Also, the antibiotic azithromycin is offered as a treatment for infected patients. According to the mayor, who's also a doctor, ozone should be applied to the anus of symptomatic patients of COVID-19 a few minutes a day in different sessions. What do you mean in different sessions?
How's it applied? What are these, a paintbrush? Like, what's happening?
Okay,
there?
So this is a little unconventional. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the ozone on my dick.
Yeah.
And then... I know it seems like I'm fucking you in the ass. I know that's what it seems like I'm suggesting is that I'm going to fuck your ass. But this is an ozone apple. I'm a doctor. God damn it. Why are you looking at me like that? I'm a doctor. Right. I'm wearing a mask while I do it.
Second option, I can put it on your ass and eat your ass. Which would you prefer? I could spread it on there
my
like peanut butter.
Ass.
I could spread it on there like peanut butter and then just eat it. Well, I got to press it in somehow.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's not just going to go in on its own.
Oh, yeah.
Do you even know medicine? What is
who
happening?
Is the doctor here and who's the one who needs ozone up their asshole? Clearly.
I've heard
my asshole smell like a fucking toy train engine? What's going on?
I've heard it's like sunshine up your ass, but never ozone up your ass. What do you do to combat it? Do you just spray old-timey cleansers up in there or release some Freon up your ass to get rid of it, to counteract it? How do you counteract the ozone in your ass, I wonder? Can there be global warming in your ass? I mean, I wonder how this works.
Okay, so first we got to kind of rub around the area for a little while. That's to get the ozone layer prepped. Yeah. Then the hole in the ozone layer will expand as it gets more comfortable.
We love the hole in the ozone layer. That's my favorite part. Yeah.
It is a simple, quick application of 2 to 3 minutes a day. It will probably be a rectal application. Which is a very, very fast.
Very fast. I don't need a lot of time. I don't need a lot of your time.
With a thin catheter.
Well, hey, thin is relative. It's thin in comparison to other things. It's thick in comparison to other things.
You know, if that's your direction of choice, maybe thin is a good thing in this circumstance, right? Like,
yeah, who the hell wants a bulldozer-sized catheter? Nobody wants that.
It helps very much in the positive cases of coronavirus.
The best line is the last line. The treatment has no proven effectiveness against the new coronavirus. Dude is just like, no, man, I got to try this. I got a plan.
All right. Here's the thing. You're sick for no other reason. I'm going to need to play with your asshole for a little while. That's...
Right, so you should have, if you sent a message in, you should have gotten a response from Ian, patrons, with an apology. If you did not get that response from Ian, send a message to us on Patreon. Ian should respond to it, and he should say a very heartfelt sorry to all those people that he forgot to mention your name a couple weeks ago. So we are going to keep mentioning names because people keep becoming patrons, and we can't thank you enough for doing that, especially in these very, very difficult times. We really do truly appreciate the security that we know we can pay next month's rent on the studio. So thank you.
And the landlord and Ian appreciate that as well, guys.
Yeah. 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 And if you enjoy the commercials, Ian doesn't work for free, it turns out. So he doesn't do this out of the kindness of his own heart. So,
which we agree is rude.
Yeah, which we genuinely, And so, and if you can't support the show monetarily, be sure to use our sponsor, adamandeve.com. Gloria, check out. They are a great sponsor of the show, and they also pay for Ian. So I want to thank our patrons, though, Aaron and Phil BK, Mac and Cheese Yummy AA, Mia, Gabriel, the dingo that took your baby, Trent, Timothy, Nick, Shane, and Socratic Samurai. Thank you very much for your generous donations. We really do truly appreciate it. If you want to become a patron, you can always go to dissonancepod.com and there's a link there, or you can go to patreon.com/dissonancepod and you can become a patron on a per episode basis to help us produce the show. We got a couple messages in the last couple weeks where people are saying they hate Patreon. They want to leave. Is there any other way that you can support the show? Yes, on our website, you can support the show with PayPal. We have a PayPal donate button. But I do want to warn you, we only post our content, our extra content, to Patreon. And the reason why we do that is because the amount of bookkeeping that it would take to follow everybody who donates and make a decision on how that works. And, oh, this person donated, so they get something, and then they stopped donating, so they didn't. All that stuff, all that bookkeeping is handled by Patreon, and that's how we just don't have the resources to do it anywhere else.
No.
Patreon makes it easy for us to allow other listeners to have access to content that they donated for. And so that's why we use Patreon, so that you guys get something out of the deal. If you don't like Patreon, I don't know what to tell you, because we only have one place that our stuff is. So I'm sorry that we can't accommodate, but it's really an accounting issue. It's really just genuinely a work issue, when we don't have enough energy or time to put into individually sending things out to people. We got a message from, this is from Steve, and Steve let us know that he wanted to shit on our joke a little, Tom. We were talking last week about 30 liters of...
Shitty Steve with
30 liters
facts.
Of jizz, horse jizz. And he said, I just want to let you know that I think that the container was liquid nitrogen 30 liter container, not that it contained 30 liters of horse jizz. I like to think it contains 30 liters of blended horse jizz, but that's up to you. It's up to you.
Well, we did get another email from somebody who let us know that the amount of ejaculate from a horse
yes,
ranges.
It does.
And like the high end range was something like a half a liter.
That is a lot of jizz, bro.
Holy
that's
shit.
That's like a whole bukkake party.
Dude, that is a wet spot that is like, no one's sleeping there. You can't, like, that's like, you boil your sheets.
Your champagne glass overfloweth. That's what, that's all I'm saying. Overfloweth.
That is foul. That is, half a liter?
Half a liter.
Half a liter.
Jesus. Do you do it on ice or what do you do? I don't know. The next question we got, this is from Alexa.
Yep.
And Alexa asks, if allowed to use only one utensil for all future meals, would you select the fork or the spoon? Tom, go.
I got to go fork, man.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I got to go fork. Yeah, my wife and I got into it on this a little bit. Like, it's fork for me. She's like, how are you going to eat cereal and soup? I was like, I don't eat cereal.
No, if I have a bowl, I can eat it. I'll just hold it up to my mouth and drink it. I'll be okay. The bowl facilitates automatically, sloppily, don't get me wrong,
yeah,
sloppily
right.
and disgustingly facilitates drinking all or, you know, scooping whatever it is that's semi-solid into your mouth. The fork is necessary because what are you going to do with a steak?
I thought a steak was my example too. Like, you're going to hold the steak down, like press it down with your spoon and saw it into spoon chunks.
Eat a turkey.
I'm not doing
that. Eat a turkey drumstick with a spoon. Show me how that's done. Right. So
I was like, if I'm eating something out of a bowl, like I can eat that in the dark, in the shame. Yeah. That's how cereal is meant
exactly,
to be eaten.
Exactly. Like, I was thinking the other day when I was eating cherries, I was thinking, you know, if you haven't stood over the garbage can with a handful of cherries in your hand, spitting the pits into the garbage can, you're a liar. Because I know you've done it. I know you've done it. Everybody has stood over the garbage can with either a bag or a handful of cherries. You eat one, you blah, 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 flush that fucking the seed out of the center. You tie the stem into a knot with your tongue and then you spit them both out.
All right. I don't quite have the skills for the last one, but bravo.
Got a message. Someone said in an image of a cowspunk fan posted on this.
Yeah,
thing.
Okay, that's real.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to post it in the show notes because it has a license plate on it. So I won't post it, but they did post. They did send us a message with a cowspunk fan.
And it has like in the logo, it has a little swimmy
sperm.
It does.
It does. All right. Got a message from Macy. Macy let us know that Amazon Smile has several different charities, Trevor Project, Camp Quest, ACLU, WYOAIDS is in there, Good Thinking Society, It Gets Better, and Modest Needs. So if you have to buy from the ultra evil conglomerate that is Amazon, go to Amazon Smile and use Amazon Smile, and that might help you alleviate, you know, you sitting up all night hugging your knees because you had to give Jeff Bezos money. We got a message from Elvis. And Elvis says, doesn't anybody know how mail-in ballots work? Like this, every ballot is received and matched up with a voter registration card, which is updated to indicate Joe Schmo voted in the November 2020 election. No significant difference from what they do in person. That's exactly right. There's no difference. And did you see in this Jonathan Swan interview
what he's talking about this?
A dog got in a fucking ballot. Did you hear that shit?
Yeah. What do you mean? It's just not true. There's never anything to verify any of that shit. And like Jonathan Swan pushes back pretty hard. He's like, no, they're not. They're not sending out ballots.
Yeah, they're sending out applications. Yeah. You have to apply.
Not sending out ballots.
Yeah.
Stop lying.
I just applied and was approved for voting in Illinois. And to be honest, part of me doesn't even need to do it. I'm only doing it to piss Trump off. I'm doing it to make him, I want him to be mad that there's going to be X amount of vote by mail stuff in Illinois. I'm happy that he'll be upset by that. I'm happy that that will just tweak him just a little.
Just to tweak his nipple a little. Just meep, meep.
We got a bunch of different messages about whether the stinky jizz tree, what it is. Someone says it's ginkgo. Another couple people say it's linden trees. They also sent a Mitchell and Webb sketch that we will post on this week's show notes. So evidently there's a bunch of different trees that smell like jizz. So when you go out, just make sure you every time you get near a tree, just get on your knees. That's all you need to do.
There's also a pear tree. that smells like this. Smell, the calorie
they
pair.
They all smell like jizz, I guess.
It's all 5 calories.
Someone asked us about the bumper music we play at the end. They ask, and specifically the one that happens right before we go to the email section. That is from a GarageBand. That came from GarageBand. That's something I got when we were doing Everyone's a Critic years ago. Yeah. And I had no idea what I was doing. I just found a thing that sounded like, hey, we should transition now. And so that's what it is. Actually, there was a FAQ page, and I don't know if it's available on our site anywhere. Maybe go to dissonancepod.com/FAQ and see if that works. But there was an FAQ that listed a ton of stuff, and that was specifically in there. All those different bumpers that I use were actually linked. All right, so that's going to wrap it up. We want to thank Seth Andrews for joining us. You can check out his new book in the show notes. We'll put links to buying his book on, hopefully if it's out on Audible, if not on Amazon and other places. It's Confessions of a Fox News Christian. We hope that you enjoy it. We hope that you buy it. Seth's a friend of the show, so check his book out. I'm sure it's riveting and a great read. But you can check his show out too, The Thinking Atheist, and you can check out all his stuff at sethandrews.com. All that stuff will be in the show notes this week, but we want to thank Seth for joining us.
Great guy and a great guest every time.
Absolutely. And that is going to wrap it up for this week. Be sure to check out our live streams, 9 p.m. Central. A lot of people are showing up and we're having a great time, so check them out. We'll be there next week, 9 p.m. Central, so come hang out with us. But that's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to leave you like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain deadpan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.